You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 320, the Groovy episode. That's right, this is Features Editor John Gentile, and we are here on Punk News Podcast 320. Woohoo! Adam White, it's 320. It's the hippies' favorite holiday, 320.
We proved on last week's episode that we know all about drugs. So
I suspect Adam White knows a little bit more than he's letting on to. He's like, well, I'm not going to reiterate what Adam White said, but I think Adam White, he's got an interest at least, but I could be wrong.
They got this thing called, what was it, Jenkum, I think, where you like you put poo in a jar and you huff the poo. Oh,
so gross.
Oh, I think it was like a sex thing, Jenkum.
I'm pretty sure it was like an internet hoax, but if that's a sex thing for
it's
you.
Real. It's real.
I mean, what is it?
It's exactly what Adam said.
You do in a jar and then sniff it?
It after like letting it like ferment.
Oh, man.
It's fucked.
Is that real? Is that real, or just?
I was positive it was one of these things that just showed up on the internet, where every once in a while the internet's like, you wouldn't believe what's happening in Florida, and then they post some horrible thing, and everyone's like, well, Florida, of course that's happening there. I thought it was one of those.
It's possible, but I mean, I've heard other accounts that we let's not do this. Let's not go into this.
Good point. That's tricky, Ricky. Being wise as always, we do not need to talk about that topic. Let me tell you, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. A jam-packed episode. We're going to do record collecting like we do with the new classic crew once in a while. But before that, we're just going to read a couple of emails. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from is this from Doug? No, this is from Double D. That's Doug. Here's what he said. 1, 2, 3, 4. I've been a Ramones fan since 1979. My favorite album and first exposure to the Ramones was the live broadcast of the New Year's Eve show at the Palladium in 1979. After hearing the show, I was hooked. It was the most so he's been a fan since 1979. It was the most amazing, exciting, and fun music I had ever heard. After hearing the Ramones live as my first exposure to a band, I was disappointed in most of their studio albums. Luckily, the guy at the local record shop had recorded the show off the radio and was selling the cassette tapes under the table. I bought one of the cassette tapes and pretty much wore it out. I went round back a year later and bought another one. I now have the show in FLAC format from the soundboard with gapless playback. Another favorite Ramones album is the Remains album, which is a live show from 2002 with Dee Dee and Marky and Dee Dee's wife Barbara. What you didn't touch on the Remains during the Punk News Podcast show. I enjoyed your Ramones Week broadcast, and I hope you pass along these shows. Never forget the Ramones created punk rock and the template for punk rock. You only need to look at the first album to see proof, black and white cover. It was recorded in 7 days, and the 14 tracks blow by in a brief 29 minutes and 4 seconds, and Johnny is flipping off on the cover. If that's not punk rock, I don't know what is. The only way to experience the Ramones was live, but that's just my take on one of my favorite bands of all time. I saw them so many times, and every time was better than the first. More than half my adult life included the Ramones. I'm sorry you guys didn't get to see the Ramones shows that I did, but that's why I'm so happy to be old, because I saw all the best bands. Thanks again. All hail Gloss from Double D Doug.
Man, I'm jealous of so much of that guy's
life. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, Doug seems pretty chill, man.
The amazing thing there is that he circles back to that radio recording as his favorite thing, even compared to a lot of the studio stuff. And that speaks to me, because I'm going to circle back to that way at the end of the show with the last song that I play, where there's something that I feel severely that is missing from so much of what I have to sit down and listen to, because I force myself to listen to the things that you kids like. And
I know what it's missing. Keith Morris, right?
It's missing Keith Morris and the guy that was, what's the guy from the Melvins and everything else. Yeah. We'll talk about them later, but there that sentiment absolutely rings true for me, and it's it's ringing more true today and recently than not. So, yeah.
Is everything all right, Adam? Everything going all right over there?
Everything's going all right. Music is so fucking boring is what I'm getting at. True. Jesus Christ.
We'll get to that later. I agree. This is from Dion. Dion said, "Hey, guys, longtime listeners, many hours on the road driving to and from the various mines around my home country, South Africa. That fund my punk rock habit have been passed." I'm going to reread this sentence. Yeah. Rewind. Sorry, everybody. "Hello. Longtime listener, many hours on the road driving to and from the various mines around my home country, South Africa, that fund my punk rock habit have been passed with the Punk News crew." Okay, so he's saying he listens to us when he drives around South Africa. "Every week, I hope Rich will make a big comeback with one of his monster rants, or Kier will just pop up to tell us how lovely the Bouncing Souls are. So now that I have my old school credentials established, I'm also a fan of the new Classic crew. It's a great blend of the various influences and histories that make up the punk rock ecosystem. I was one of the dudes that commented that a J Church special would be awesome, and I do think an actual J Church special would be sweet. I also think that in broader terms, an underappreciated band week would be a cool thing." He's referring to, we did Ramones week, and we've also done Clash week, and we always do 70s week, and I mean, 90s week, however, and next year we're going to do 70s week as well. "I even imagine the format being one person playing tunes and telling stories to the other podcasters to convince them of why they think said band is underappreciated. Good times, and thanks for the effort from Dion in South Africa."
Man, I love hearing that people like around the world for some reason subject themselves to this. That's amazing.
I'll point out that he didn't write his name Dion from South Africa. He put Dion, and I said Dion from South Africa, because I'm going to start like signing emails John from the United States. Anyway, thanks for writing in, Dion. This is from Neil, our UK friend that yells at us, as opposed to Rich, our UK friend that compliments us. This is from Neil. "Hey guys, okay. Liverpool Neil writing in again. I just listened to episode 318 and had a couple of Moz comments for John. Glad you enjoyed the Morrissey show. He is amazing live. I have seen him maybe 10 times and wanted to add a couple of things. Morrissey has been taking his shirt off and throwing it into the crowd at the end of his set for about 25 years now. So that was nothing weird or special for this tour. Similarly, he plays Meat is Murder at every show with the same distressing video. He probably has turned thousands of people to the cause of vegetarianism with that video. The only time he didn't play was at Riot Fest, and that was probably a good idea because of a lot of kids were there, and he could only do an hour. And actually, Neil kind of shames me here. The rap song in his pre-video set was called All Over by a group called Chitty Bang. It's there because it samples the Moz song I'm Throwing My Arms Around Paris. Now I'm going to pause here. Do you guys know where Chitty Bang is from?
I don't
know.
Philadelphia. So I really should have known that.
Oh. Uh-huh.
This is why Morrissey's pretty cool, man. So, like, Morrissey's intro videos, Ramones, Sex Pistols, New York Dolls, it was, like, all the stuff that had influenced him. But in the middle of his spiel was this Chitty Bang video, and I couldn't figure why it was there. And as Neil explains, it's there because it samples I'm Throwing My Arms Around Paris. And I think that's pretty cool because Morrissey is showing us what makes him, and then he's showing us, even though, I mean, it's delightfully cocky of Morrissey, if you will, he's showing how he's influenced Philadelphia directly, and maybe even how Philadelphia's influenced him. So it's kind of a neat like recognition of hometown flavor in the Moz makeup, if you will. I think that's kind of cool. Don't you guys think so?
I'm distressed by your use of the word flavor. So
flavor?
Yeah.
Lastly, Ricky is not allowed to ever comment on Morrissey ever again.
Yeah.
Ricky, Morrissey played Judy is a Punk in New York only. He's never played it before. He played it in New York as a tribute to the Ramones. If you don't get that, you should probably just stick to Pairs and the Descendants. Stay free, mean. Signed Neil.
Mean. Second of all, we can agree to disagree, but the name, you know what? I won't comment on his music. I'm fine because I don't listen to it that much, but when it's up to his hijinks, I'll call him out when necessary. So I'll leave it there.
And this is from Sean. I can't remember if we read this last week or not, so this might be a repeat. Sean said, "Hey guys, I'd just like to follow up on the email I sent previously. I might have come off as a tad aggressive." And I'm going to pause because we here at the Punk News Podcast are never aggressive towards the reviewers. I was still on a bit of a Death Grips haze after getting to see them live in the front row at Riot Fest a few days prior. Also, I'd like to clarify that Show Me the Body is not my band. Oh, I think I did read this, didn't I? Anyways, if I'll read it again. Anyways, if I haven't completely alienated you yet, I'd like to suggest Death Grips week next year. To John's point about the guy from No Doubt, I think I do reserve the right to not care. Here's my example. As much as I love the Dead Kennedys, I'll probably never see them live on account of Jello Biafra being not in the band. I'm sure the new singer is great, but Jello is responsible for so much character of that band that seeing the DKs without him would not be the same. However, if all that changed was their drummer, I wouldn't think twice about seeing them live. How does this relate to Gabriel McNair? He doesn't hold the band together. If he left, they would get another trombonist. I don't follow No Doubt closely enough for that to make a difference. On the other hand, if Gwen Stefani left the band, love her or hate her, that would be a big deal because she adds her own flavor to the band. Sorry for taking up your time. Thanks for allowing me to just ramble on. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks for writing in, Sean. I can't remember if we read that last week or not. I think we did.
We did because I commented on when I saw the Dead Kennedys.
Yeah, and then I think I played a Gabriel McNair song. Anyways, well, thanks for writing in, Sean. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And because we're getting so much kudos for the new classic crew here, we're going to do what the new classic crew does best and talk about recent records that we have snatched up. Tricky Ricky, what recent records have you snatched up recently?
Okay, so I mean, I don't know how recent these are going to be. I'm opening up the Instagram and this. Okay, so like this. Gloss Trans Day of Revenge. Snagged that one when that came out.
Is that physical?
Yeah.
Or are they strictly that? That's the new release, right?
The new one, yeah. But both EPs are on 7 inches as well. And then I don't think we talked about this, but the Holy Mess broke up a few months ago, and so I was missing one of their records, Can Do Rue Las Degas, so I got that on blue vinyl. That was the one I was missing. And then, you know, I've been looking for this for a little while. Riverboat Gamblers, Dead to Me, and Off With Their Heads toured together in like 2013 and put out a three-way split 7-inch. I got mine on... I think it was too fat. I got mine on Black Splatter with gold vinyl. And then...
That's cool. That's cool. I didn't know that those guys put out anything together. How many songs are
there? Yeah. I think it's only three. And it came out with other variants too. But that one you can find on Discogs easily for... I forgot how much I paid for it. Not a lot, though. And then this was cool. I mean, I know this isn't this isn't punk news, but New Noise did a really great Descendants cover for the physical issue, and they put out a Descendants flexi with Fighting Myself on it. So that came in. Then
I think the interview in that is like really good too, right?
Oh yeah, because it's done by the one and only John Gentile. and then my Descendants stuff came. I mean, we're going kind of far back. I got my Descendants record, Hypercaffeine Spazzinate, on green vinyl, plus the Spaz Hazard with on black with the etched Milo cartoon going on.
So for Hypercaffeine is
yeah.
Are all of the covers for that the glow in the darky?
Yeah, mine goes in the dark. The special Kings Road merch email subscriber thing, like they could get a glow in the dark vinyl copy, I believe.
Okay. I mean, I'm pretty sure I just have like the normal peasant copy that is like, you know, on embarrassing black vinyl and fucking normal in all other respects, but I noticed when I took it out, I'm like, I think this is glow-in-the-dark paint. But.
Yes, I believe it does. The Shell Corporation put out a flexi for an animal shelter charity of Babylon's Burning by the Ruts.
Oh, nice. Yes,
that came on a blue flexi.
What's that from?
It's just a flexi they did.
Wait, the Ruts did a flexi of Babylon's Burning?
No, no, no. The Shell Corporation covered.
Oh, I see. Song.
Yeah.
What label's that out on?
Was it La Escalera?
I haven't heard of that. That's cool.
Yeah, they're a Southern California band. I think like San Diego-ish, I think. And then this summer, I did some serious discogging because there's just stuff missing in my collection that I really wanted. This happened over like the last 3 or 4 months. I was missing the red version of Star Fucking Hipsters album Until We're Dead on red vinyl. I got that. So my Star Fucking Hipsters record collection is done. And then I am so happy I found this for a decent price. I got Dead to Me's Little Brother on orange vinyl, that pressing. And then, There's one more. Oh, I also got Toy Guitars in this mess on blue vinyl, which that came out on originally. I got a Wilhelm Scream self-titled EP on black splatter with red on red vinyl. Sorry, I'm going through this because Toy Guitars' new EP in Move Like a Ghost came on clear vinyl. That was a relatively recent purchase. And then the new Noise Flexi for NoFX came out. That was with the I Don't Like Me Anymore on the blue Flexi. And then I went to a record store in Anaheim, Fullerton, called Radiation Records, and found some cool stuff. I found a 1982 pressing of Dead Kennedys' Plastic Surgery Disasters from the UK.
Nice, nice. What label is that on?
It's Alternative Tentacles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what was really cool...
Oh, that's right, Alternative Tentacles had a London office till like the late 90s or early 2000s.
I did not know that. But what was really cool is the original owner like drew all over it and like Dead Kennedys like art that they on the sleeve, which I thought was kind of neat. So I took that one. Then I also found something. I'm not kidding. This came out the same year I did, and I believe we talked about this last episode. I found at this record shop the Liza and Louise 7-inch by NoFX on pink vinyl, and it's from 1992. I was born in January of 92, and it still plays fantastically. It was a great little find. Sometimes I don't like finding stuff like online. There's a different feeling you get like of excitement when you find something in the record shop.
Oh, definitely, especially when you're not like expecting it. It just like pops up. That's like the best thing.
That's really the problem, right? Like you could, you know, given like an infinite bag of money, just go on the Discogs and just buy all of the things that you need. And then what's the fun in that?
You know, I was thinking like if I won like the lottery, like millions and millions, like would that be any fun just going on Discogs and just buying every record you want and it's mailed to you? Like
there's the hunt part also that makes it a lot more fun too.
Yeah.
So I promise I'm almost done. Introspect, they had a few extra copies of their very first 7-inch called Education that came out when vinyl was like dead in 1999. So I snagged one of those from their store. Off With Their Heads did a 10th anniversary reissue of Hospitals that trying to look for a decent price for that record. This was just the way to go. It came also with a green Flexi from Anxious and Angry Mind. The Hospitals record came on red vinyl from Ryan Young's store. I got the Kicker album on green and clear vinyl.
That's the Dave hair. There's three versions, which I think is hilarious. Yeah. There's the Dave's hair version, which is green. There's the Pete's hair, which is gray. And then there's the Toby hair, which is clear because he's bald.
Right. Right. And so I played a band called Natterers a few several episodes ago. They sent me a little care package of like their cassette of their EP, which was really nice of them. Came with like patches and stuff. That was really cool. So shout out to them. This is something I wanted to bring up because we had talked about this also. I got Against Me's Shapeshift With Me on clear vinyl. And we were talking about how it was sort of expensive, you know?
Record. Yeah, it was like $30 after you like ordered it or something.
Yeah, so I had thought that it was gonna be like some big great gatefold or something like that. It turns out they made that record into a double LP on clear vinyl.
That's why it's
So they're like three songs on like each side, but still it's a very nice piece that they did. So shout out to them. I don't know how I got this. I got this really, really early, but I got Off With Their Heads' Won't Be Missed acoustic album that we premiered. We premiered a song by them from the album from Epitaph. It doesn't come out till the 25th, but I still got the beer gold color from Epitaph, and that only had 200 copies. And then Brutal Youth, which I'll be playing a song from tonight. Their new album is killer. It's called Sanguine. And I got mine on red vinyl from Stomp Records. Awesome, awesome band. And then, Adam, you will be very happy about this. I have two more. These are my last two. I got Canadian stuff only after this. I got I saw the Dirty Nil in Long Beach last week. Amazing. amazing. Like, they were a band for me that I needed to see live to really get it. I picked up their album, Higher Power, got the band to sign it, which was very nice. And then this came in. I've been posting stories a little bit about this. The Rebels Sing, a tribute to Todd Sirius and the Rebel Spell, which has like Propagandi and Brutal Youth and a bunch of other Canadian bands covering Rebel Spell, came on just a really nice gatefold record, just on black vinyl though. And it's a great, I reviewed it. It's a great, a really fun comp that came out this year from Not Your Buddy Records. And that is it. That is about 4 to 5 months worth of shit I bought.
Well, Ricky, let me tell you here. Okay, this is gonna take a while for me. So, so I picked up a copy of the Sub Pop reissue of Sleater-Kinney's The Woods, which is their album that came out in 2005. It was my number one record of 2005. It is just like you described about the Against Me record, one that they had taken and made into like a gatefold double LP just by putting three songs per side on.
Do you like that, Adam, or do you find that's excessive and annoying?
Well, in this case, it's funny because there's only maybe 10 songs on that record. Like, there's not that many songs, right? So what they did was there was no reason for a D side. Like, the second record has nothing on the back of it. So they went and they etched like the rings of a tree.
Sometimes they do like little art in the back.
And I thought that was charming and wonderful.
Oh, really? Oh, shit. Okay. Well, I just would like to mention the Against Me one, the Shapeshift with Me, is not a gatefold. It just came standard cover with just two records inside it.
They're like, how can we make this heavier to ship? And that's what they did.
Yeah. So that's all you got. All right.
Anyways, if no one's ever heard The Woods, go listen to The Woods. It's great. It's like Sleater-Kinney at their most like loud. And it's super wonderful and I like it. And I've also acquired, not purchased, but I acquired a gift in the form of a record. Now, we mentioned earlier in the show, someone wrote us and they talked about how much they liked when Kira used to be a host on here. So I saw Kira recently at a wedding and it was very delightful. And Kira sent me a gift afterwards. A few years ago, she was one of the organizers of a DC area art project called Call and Response. And each year they bring in various artists with various themes to do. One person would do something and the other artist would respond to it. And the one year they did it with music. So they brought in Restorations, had Restorations go and write some custom music for the event. They pressed that onto a 7-inch and then the artists responded to that music. So there's this cool little 7-inch with like a book and all kinds of stuff that I have not yet dug into yet, with full of, I don't want to say poetry because I haven't read it yet, but it looks like there's a lot of crazy stuff in here. It is a super neat little package. I haven't even gone through it yet, but it feels very special and homemade, and I am very thankful that Kira sent that to me. So anyways, yeah, I have this Call and Response thing that has this music that Restorations put together for that event sitting in my hands now. But yeah, that's it. I have not bought shit over the past little while because I am trying to be good for, I don't know, my wife and I want to go on a vacation, and that usually means you don't buy 600 LPs. So that's what's going on.
Let me just add two more that I skipped over for some reason. I'm sorry.
It's like these were in the cushions. Yeah. I didn't know.
So I also got AJJ's The Bible 2 on tricolor, like baby pink, baby blue, baby yellow vinyl from Side One Dummy, who do really great. They always do really, really high quality releases for vinyl. And then when I saw Gloss, I also saw Pure Disgust and picked up their LP that came out this year. And that I promise that is it.
The John. Bible 2 has, I think, an incredible, and I'm just coming back to this record because we talked about it and got into a little bit of a fight a bunch of episodes ago. I feel like the latter half of that record is super strong, and the start of it is maybe not so strong now that I've gone through it a bunch of times. But the end of that record has so much shit that just makes me want to just, like, I don't know, throw my fist in the air and, like, kick my computer over. Mostly the stuff that's on, like, oh god, like White Worms has so many, there's so many lyrics in that song where I'm just like, yeah, fuck everything. And I just want to, like, knock stuff over.
That's interesting, because I really like some of the like, I really liked American Garbage and Golden Eagle. I thought those were in the beginning. I agree. I think Terrifier is a great song. That's at the end. But I think it does sort of, I think I agree, it does build up toward the end.
And I'm all about the build up, and I'm not, like, slagging off the stuff at the start or anything, but, like, by the end of it is when I'm just yelling in agreement with what's going on. So anyways, that record is cool. John, did you buy 600 records?
I did not, but I've got three cool things to talk about. Ari Up was the lead singer of the Slits. She had a solo career, and the Slits got back together and released a fantastic album called Trapped Animal. Did you guys know that for some reason, and ever since the Slits started, they've been big in Japan? The Slits are very popular in Japan. I don't know why. Years ago, have you ever guys been to the Rough Trade UK website?
No.
I'm sure I have, yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, Rough Trade is a legit company, but they always have semi-sketchy stuff on their website. Like, they often have Beastie Boys bootlegs, Danzig bootlegs for some reason. Well, there's a – and a while ago, they had a Ari Up solo live CD in which she does Ari Up solo stuff and Slit stuff. And I've always wanted it, but I saw it on the Rough Trade for like $40. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to pay $40 and plus like $20 shipping from the UK. I'm not going to pay $60 for a Ari Up CD. And but I've wanted it for a while. It's called Ari Up Never Surrender. And then the price is actually, like, shot way up, and I was kicking myself for not getting it. Ricky and Adam, do you guys ever notice this phenomena? Like, once in a while, you'll see something pop up for sale in China or Russia for, like, really cheap.
I'm not usually in the Chinese and Russian markets for anything.
Well, I am. Let me tell you.
How are you coming across these things in China or Russia? Like,
because when I want a CD, I will hunt to the ends of the earth for it, Adam White. I will hunt to the ends of the earth for it. And sure enough, I found Ari Up's Never Surrender for sale for $8 in China. Shipping to America, $4. $12.
How?
And I'm like, they're going to burn me, but I'm going to risk it. I'm going to risk it. Lo and behold, today, in my mailbox, from China, Ari Up's Never Surrender, pressed in Japan.
Are you sure it's not like an unauthorized copy or something like
that? Well, I don't think it is, because the authorized copies are only semi-legit to begin with. I mean, they're made in Japan, you know. Right. But I mean, it looks pretty legit. I don't know how. I don't know what they're thinking over in China. No wonder their economy's doing bad lately. They're shipping me CDs at less than cost. You know what I mean? And this is a $50 CD. Anyway, so this was cool. I haven't listened to it yet because I'm excited to. It's Ari Up live in Tokyo. And I just was – there's another Ari Up CD that I want to get that was made in Japan. Adam, well, you'll appreciate this. Vic Ruggiero of the Slackers, did you know he did an entire album, or almost an album, of songs with Ari Up?
I did not. That's really cool.
I know he did a single with her on Slackers and Friends, but he actually did about four 7-inch singles with her, and they're super duper rare. But he collected them all on a CD. But a Japanese company put it out, and I haven't gotten it yet, but I've heard a couple of the tracks. It sounds pretty good. It's basically like the Slackers with Ari Up singing over top. It sounds pretty cool. So anyways, Never Surrender by Ari Up. I just got that. That's really cool. Second thing that I got was Psychotic Pineapple. Adam and Ricky, do you guys know Psychotic Pineapple?
You have played Psychotic Pineapple. I've heard the name. Is it not very long and drony?
No, it's not. It's not.
Oh, what am I thinking of?
I don't know. I don't know.
You have a whole library of long drony things.
I do.
I've definitely heard the name. I don't think I've heard their stuff before.
I did play them once on the podcast. Adam White is correct. Psychotic Pineapple, they only have one album. They existed from like 1973 to like 1979 in Berkeley. Never big at all. And if you ask me, their sole album, Where's the Party, is probably the greatest punk rock never was. It's fast, it's wacky, it's great. Burger Records just put out a cassette tape of Psychotic Pineapple live in 1979. It's about an hour and a half worth. It is great. You should definitely get the album first, Where's the Party? But the cassette is basically garage rock mixed with like Frank Zappa, mixed with punk rock, mixed with Devo, mixed with just a smidge of the Misfits. They've got some scary songs, but it doesn't sound like the Misfits, but it's got a little bit of horror element to it once in a while. Fantastic record. Psychotic Pineapple is great. Last thing is, I was at the record store, and I'll tell you, people, you guys know I love the Dollar Bin. I love the Dollar Bin. I love getting 12-inch singles from the 80s. They are so great. I'll just mention this instead, and then I'll mention a couple other things I want to mention. Never underestimate the Dollar Bin, people. Never underestimate the Dollar Bin. This past week at the record store, and the Dollar Bin, I got Johnny Cash's Mean as Hell record from 1976. Cool. But it's a Korean pressing.
Ooh.
So like the cover's all kind of weird looking. Like you can tell it's probably a bootleg, but I don't think there's any official Korean pressing of Johnny Cash from 1974 or whatever, you know. But on the inside, it's got all these lyrics. Oh, and I'll mention this too. It's got all these lyrics in Korean, which is cool. And I also got a whole bunch of Polynesia. Where's Polynesia? What's the name of the Polynesia? Oh, shit. Well, I got a bunch of Polynesian cassette tapes from the 80s, including Men at Work's first album from Preston Polynesia on cassette tape.
How are they different somehow other than from Origin?
The music's the same. The tapes themselves are different. The tapes themselves? Yeah, the tapes are like really weird looking and the cases are really weird looking. You guys remember – well, Ricky, you'll remember this. But Adam, do you remember in the 80s Disney videos would come in these big puffy cassette tapes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I had those. Yeah.
The cassette tapes come in mini those. They're like mini big puffy things. It's pretty cool. Never underestimate the Dollar Bin, people. First of all, first thing I want to bring up is Adam and Ricky. I've been thinking, do I want to put my entire collection up on Discogs? That is just listed so I can look at it and so people can marvel at it. Is that worth my time, or is that just vanity and no one ever looks at it really?
So
go ahead, Adam.
No, because all right. I'll answer here. Don't let my answer change your answer, Ricky, by any means. I would
Ricky,
say
put your fingers in your ears and go la.
I feel like I'm gonna color like the court outcome here. I'm gonna wreck the jury. I think you should, if for no other reason than making catalogs of things is an incredibly satisfying thing for me from a. I hate to say from an OCD standpoint, because people just throw around OCD like it's a character trait and not an actual problem someone has, but I'm going to do it. From an OCD standpoint, it is deeply satisfying to me to make meticulous lists of stuff, and all the better that, you know, other people can look at it. So yeah, I'm down.
I want to do it, but my only hesitation is I've got a lot of dollar records, like Blue Oyster Cult, and do I really want to spend like 20 minutes or 10 minutes figuring out which exact press of Blue Oyster Cult's Don't Fear the Reaper do I have?
Yes, you do. Oh my God. Yeah.
So let me answer that too. I am like years behind on doing this. I started doing it when I first found out about Discogs. The cool thing is that people will look through it, and this actually happened to me on Instagram today, believe it or not. And what they'll do is they'll just message you and offer you stuff. Like I had someone ask for one of my Direct Hit albums. I said no, because that is a rare Dome Splitter is a hard record to find right now. I also had on Instagram, which I guess I kind of catalog it on Instagram, but it's nowhere complete at all.
Am I setting myself up for a home invasion, because I've got a lot of rare BC Boys records. I don't want some BC Boy maniac coming to my house with a shotgun and saying, where's the Mike D's, you know?
Well, that's why you put in a different, like a pseudonym. That's why I wouldn't like, my name is definitely not Ricky Frankel on Discogs.
Maybe I'll put my name as Ricky Frankel on Discogs.
My name's totally okay. Adam White on Discogs, I think. Let me check. Hold on.
But anyway,
no, sorry, hold on, world. It's Adam V. White, like with my middle initial, because there's some other. I own 16 things, so whatever. And I'm lonely, so come see me. But yeah, whatever. John, there are so many reasons for people on the internet to find you and take your skin that you create for yourself already. by all the things that you're involved in and all the various encounters that you have with people, that like the Discogs murderers, they got to get way at the back of the line. So I can't imagine, like by the time they get to you, there'll be nothing but like bones and lint and stuff. So yeah,
there's a whole line of people waiting to get to me before the record guy.
Oh shit. Like that would not be the worry in my mind.
What also I would say is, you know, if it were me and I would start doing it. But again, well, actually, let me keep going for where it was off. I actually got an offer through Instagram for one of my records today. So it is kind of interesting to see it, to see what is being sought after. That's what I was kind of getting at. And also seeing what the market is. I mean, more than just seeing what the median sell point is, especially if something hasn't been bought on Discogs yet. If I were you, I would probably start with the, like the LPs, then the singles, and then the 7 inches. But I'm guessing your collection is probably bigger than mine at this point. So it'll probably be something that you can't do in like a night, unless you do pull an all nighter for Discogs.
Yeah. Well, honestly, see,
here's what it reminds me of, and this was the pre social internet version of this. Was there was some point back in the early, it would have been like, I don't know, like in like 2000 or something like that, right? When I remember a few of us that had blogs back at that point would usually have like a text file that would live on the blog that was like, you know, cdlist.txt. Mm-hmm. And I know that I can guarantee you that Scott Heisel had one, Scott of Best Miss Western fame, X-Punk News. I totally had one. I probably did one inspired by him. And I spent so much time making sure that like anytime I bought a CD, it got on that fucking text file. And it was incredibly important to me. And I don't know why. And I treated that far more preciously than I've ever really touched Discogs. But like it feeds kind of the same thing. Like I think that like the honorable way for you to do Discogs is to jump in and to just decide that you need like a big meticulous list for no particular reason. Don't approach it with the sane, well, you know, like I'm gonna open a store and see what I can get rid of. No. Don't do that. Do it for purely, you know, you have dishes that you should be doing and the lawn is too long, but you're going to go make sure that some stupid Men at Work record that you own is the right, has the right run out numbers on it.
I'm thinking I'm definitely going to related to that. So I was going through my record collection. First of all, people, if you got CDs to sell, now is the time to sell CDs. See, everyone that is too cool for CDs. But collectors are will. I've been selling CDs for good bucks the past couple of months, people. Good bucks.
What is your market? Where are you selling stuff to?
Discogs. I'm going to brag, but I don't know if it's bragging, but if you sell like a big band, yesterday I sold a Rush CD, a promo Rush CD, same music as the normal version, which is the promo version, where the hell did it go? I went to the Middle East, went for a lot of money. Similarly, I sold a VOC's record to France for a lot of money. Basically, my strategy for CDs is if you have a very rare CD, that is, you have the only CD for sale on the internet or practically the only CD for sale on the internet of that CD, then put it up on Discogs or eBay for a very high price. And just let it sit there. And what will happen is someone with a lot of money that, like, to them, like, $100, $200 is, like $5 to us, they'll buy it, and they're probably in Europe or the Middle East. I sell a lot of CDs to the Europe and the Middle East and a lot of rarer records to Japan.
Well, how do you – and I'm sorry, this is probably super boring to anyone if they're not already bored by us talking about things that we've bought. But how the hell do you calculate shipping when you're trying to sell something?
Oh, because I know exactly what it is. CD is $11 overseas, and a record is records are very expensive overseas. It's like $18 or something. Hmm. I do flat rate. My shtick, and I shouldn't tell people this because it's competitive, but in the USA, I put any record I ship in the USA is $3, and people love seeing that because they love seeing low shipping, and so that means I take a dollar or two hit on actual shipping, but I factor that into my price. So people love low shipping because they're worried that they're going to spend $40 on a record and then get busted $16 for shipping. But if they say $40 for a record, I would actually put $39.95 plus $3 shipping. They'd be like, sweet, only that. This is what I'm paying. There's no chance involved. Hmm. So you're better – but you can't do that overseas, and you have to be very careful shipping overseas. I can't speak to Canada because overseas stuff goes wonky all the time. So you've got to be very careful where you're shipping to, who you're shipping to, how you're shipping. But in the USA, $3 shipping, that's the way to go. People love seeing that. I've sold $100 CDs for the mere fact that I put $3 shipping on it. I'm not even kidding.
Nah, see, Canada's hard here. Like our shipping costs are all over the fucking place, and there's dramatically different shipping costs. If you're shipping from one province to another, it's different mm-hmm. in Canada. Mainly because I don't know why. We're a big fucking massive country and no one lives here. So if you want to ship something from like Ontario to British Columbia, you have to like strap it to a moose, and then the moose has to it's a whole ordeal. There's several animals. So anyways, Ricky, we're still going.
I got one more thing. We're going long tonight, boys.
All right.
So listen, I was going through my record collection, and there's a lot of records that I have now that I spend a dollar or two or even five that are worth like $15, $20, $30 that I never listen to, that I don't really care about, you know? And so I put them all out, and I'm like, well, maybe I'll just sell them on Discogs and get some easy money, you know? But I find that looking at my record collection with these records that I don't really care about so much pulled out, my record collection looks a lot less interesting. Like where I used to have like all the Circle Jerks albums, and then you know like a D Cruisin' record, and maybe Apple record, and then I would have all the effed up records. Now I only have, say, all the Circle Jerks records, then all the effed up records. I find it makes my collection less interesting. So I don't know if I should keep these records I don't really care about that maybe I'll listen to once in a while, or I should sell them and get the cash. I'm on the fence because record market's going to crash in about 2 years. So if you're going to sell records, you want to be selling them now. So I don't know,
you
man.
Think it's going to crash in 2 years?
Yeah, 2 or 3, 4 years. Yeah. I mean, a record that you have now will not be more valuable 2 years from now. I'm sure there's some exceptions, but if you have a record, it's at its most valuable now. It was really at its most valuable about 2 years ago, but now it's, you know, if you have a record for money, sell the record.
I'm kind of banking on the whole thing crashing. I mean, it's one of my not so secret dreams that I kind of want to go start a 7-inch label, but I'm not really going to do it until I can actually get 7 inches pressed. So I need the whole thing to fucking crater, and then I'll come in at that point.
Production costs won't sink though. Just value of used records.
Yeah, but I figure at some point the bloom will be off the rose, and the manufacturing will become a little bit more timely because there won't be. You know, everyone have moved on to something else. So that's what I'm banking on. I want it to die.
So I don't know, man. Should I sell these records that I don't really care about, or should I hoard them? I'm thinking I'm gonna sell them.
Sell them. You know, reclaim your shelf space. You can use that for other cool stuff. You need money to buy Jankum. There's all sorts of.
Fair enough, Ricky. Jankum away. What do you got?
Oh God. So, like I said, while I was listing off my records that I've got the last
we're already 45 minutes in, we haven't even started the podcast.
So, Brutal Youth put out their, I think it's their third album. I reviewed it. It's called Sanguine. It's off Stomp Records. It is a strong contender for the best hardcore album of the year. I mean, these guys really, really outdid themselves. I love it. The song I'm going to play off it is called The King. I believe Sam Barrett actually premiered this on Punk News, but I got this song is so good, so I'm gonna play it on here. So again, the song is called The King by Brutal Youth off their album Sanguine, and here it is. We'll be right back.
Was Ricky playing some Brutal Youth. Adam White, that top one that you're going to skip. I don't skip that one, please. I do want to talk about that.
Oh, but I figured you would. All right.
However, before we talk about that, we're going to talk about Tom DeLonge and Aliens. As you guys probably know, WikiLeaks hacked or stole or however they do, got a bunch of emails illegally and government emails. And quite interestingly, multiple emails that they snatched up were emails from Tom DeLonge to what's this guy's name here? That guy's actually kind of a bigwig. John Podesta. Adam, did you know who he was before this article?
John Podesta? No.
Oh, okay. But, yeah.
I'm from Spain, so I don't know.
I do.
Oh, you did. Anyways, John Podesta was a former member of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton's administration. He's also, I think, the head of Hillary Clinton's campaign or one of the big wigs in Hillary's Clinton campaigns. Well, him and Tom DeLonge have been emailing each other about UFOs, specifically Roswell, because Ricky seemed to know all about this guy. Ricky, what did you think of the tone of Tom DeLonge's emails? And what does this say? I've got a very particular angle on this, but Ricky, I'll let you go first. What did you think of Tom DeLonge? I mean, is this just two guys broing down about UFOs, or is there some unhealthiness here?
No, there is some unhealthiness here, I think. Tom DeLonge, I think, has been going – this is like the UFO thing, I think, is his full-time gig now. And this is something he's been talking about, you know, since Blink-182 really got big. But I believe he's like doing a whole like – I want to say it's a network. I remember seeing some sort of video for it. He's been going after this for a long time, and it's obsessive, I think. John, I have to give you credit though, because I laughed so hard at your tweet about this story. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read it out loud.
By all means.
He says, John tweeted, was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. And he goes, at John Podesta, please detail the extent of your friendship with Tom DeLonge to at Punk News. Thank you. Did we get a statement?
We didn't. And honestly, like if he wasn't in the election campaign, we might be able to finagle it. But he can't deal with any wackiness during the election, so it's probably not going to happen. But how hilarious would it be if like it wasn't election season or whatever, and we got that interview? I mean, that'd be
any amazing. Response would have been hysterical.
So
this is weird. I don't know, Adam. What do you have to say about this stuff?
I mean, there's a part of me that thinks that, okay, if you're – I never get the impression that Tom DeLonge is a happy guy. So if not being in a big money rock band is what he wants to do and he would prefer to be a not to be pejorative, but like a tin hat wearing kook, then like, hey, if that makes him happy, then by all means go, you know, go do conspiracy stuff. That's fine. But I feel, just seeing this, that a person that makes this their calling in life may have some fucked up priorities for maybe not healthy reasons. And if that's the case, then I, you know, I hope he finds some peace.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, in my profession and in writing too, I would say, and I deal with a lot of people, I deal with some wacky people once in a while, some people that aren't quite right, you know? And I don't mean like raving lunatics like Buffalo Bill or Charles Manson, but people that just are a little off. You guys know what I mean when somebody's a little off? Mm-hmm. These emails read very much to me like someone that's a little off. Like he says, I think you will find them very interesting as they were principal leadership relating to our sensitive topic. Both were in charge of most fragile divisions as is relates to classified science and DOD topics. In other words, these are A-level officials, worth our time as well as investment to bring all the way out to you. Like the way he like writes almost like a military dispatch, and the way he like uses words like our most sensitive topic, I'm seeing he comes off as a little off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, honestly, what's in there is I haven't seen the email thread that was leaked, but my impression is that Podesta is not particularly responsive to him. Is that true?
Yeah, true. I think there were not necessarily emails from Podesta back to him. However, the emails did contain chains that Podesta had replied to him at least a couple of times.
All right. So, like, what strikes me about the sentence there, or about what you read there, is the use of our.
Right, right.
Like I don't know if, like, this government bigwig considers himself and Tom DeLonge an hour. I don't know if they're on the same team in this search for aliens. I think it might be like not our but your. Like this is maybe worth your time, Tom DeLonge, but is it worth our collective time, me who's trying to like has a real job, and this, I don't know. So I can't imagine that. I imagine that this is a story because it's Tom DeLonge, but if you're a guy like John Podesta, you probably have 90 people that have looped you in to their various
you probably get an email theories, every 2 minutes.
And it's weird because, I mean, none of this is as bad as it, but like we are, there's a few people in the city here that, you know, clearly there must be a mental health issue in play, but they will go and they forward around to like every business in the city once or twice a year. Like they hit like every contact form on every website. This like 65 paragraph diatribe about, I don't even know. It's maddening to try to read it. It is about every conspiracy theory ever. But clearly someone has sat down and wrote it specifically so this is a Niagara Falls thing, specifically for Niagara, because in the midst of this like 60 paragraph screed that they put out, there is references to like local politicians and local businesses and everything like that. And like, it all seems like funny, crazy internet spam until you go and you start looking at it and you're like, oh my God, like this has taken so much effort.
Right.
By
right.
someone to put together. And it's super hilarious until like, you kind of think about like, oh, I hope whoever put this together isn't, you know,
not doing well.
They're probably not. Are they up all night fretting about this? Because it seems totally wackadoodle to me. But like it's clearly not just something they generated with a, you know. They didn't just like grab a bunch of paragraphs off of Google. Like someone wrote this. So you know, Tom does not read that unhinged here, but I don't know.
He reads a little. It shows he's putting a lot of effort into it, and he reads a little off. Don't you agree? You know?
And that's why I'm worried about making too much fun about it, because you know, I don't want to, you know. On the one hand, maybe it's a hobby that he's super into, and if that's fine, cool. But maybe it's not, and you know.
I don't know how he got roped in with government. I guess when you're a certain level of fame, you have contacts that have contacts, you know?
Yeah.
Listen, you guys want to talk about Discharge, or is that not really that much of a story here?
We'll mention it. I don't know if there's too much to go on here. I'll do this one here. So members of Discharge have been banned from entering Canada. The band tried to enter Canada to play a few shows recently. They were detained by border authorities. The band has gone and... stated that their U.S. tour dates, which were recently rescheduled, they're still on. So singer Jeff J.J. Janik, he went to Facebook and he posted, "Well, I'm permanently banned from Canada. Criminal charges from 20 years ago. However, they let me in to play the show for a low cost of $200 as long as I leave the country after we play. Bones made it in by the skin of his teeth. Tez and Rainey not allowed back in the U or not allowed, and they're back in the USA. Carl Morris, Egghead from the Exploited, UK Subs, etc., is going to be filling in on bass for us. Doesn't look like Discharge will ever be allowed back in Canada, so it looks like tonight will be our last Canadian show. All of our USA shows are still on." So they went and they posted this. They got nailed at the border. The border sucks. We hear this from all sorts of bands. It's horrible for bands on either side trying to go back and forth. There's all kinds of ridiculous tariffs and ridiculous garbage and all types of other things that get involved. Now, this being a British band, I don't know if they end up in the same if they end up having to deal with the same sort of nonsense that, you know, Canadian bands are hit with when they have to visit the U.S. or when U.S. bands, when they visit Canada. Like, this would probably fall into more of a category of international border. Not that there's not international border crossing in those two examples I just made, but, you know, someone not from the continent international border crossing, which probably sets off a few different alarm bells and puts you into a different stream of scrutiny. So, you know, this sucks. I can't really comment on it.
I like how three-fourths members of Discharge have serious enough criminal charges to warrant they're not allowed into the country. Yeah.
The border is super fucked up because you can get – it's really at the discretion of the guard that you end up talking to and what that guard is decides to focus on and how the conversation goes with them. We live right on the border here, and we cross into the States, you know, all the time. We go to the States sometimes to buy milk, so it's not that we're over all the time. However, if I go get in my car and I drive to the border and I tell them that I'm going to go across and I'm going to go buy you know, gasoline and milk and beer, that's fine. I can go over and there's never a problem. If I went over and I said something that I was going to go, you know, I got to go help my friend with something. And they come back with us and they say, well, hold on, is your friend paying you to help them with that? And I'm like, oh, really? Yeah, they're right. And let's say you're gonna help someone move and they're gonna give you $40. The guard, if they are in a particular mood, is really fully within their power to make your life hell about that because you're taking an American job by coming over and trying to do business in the country. And I have friends that were, you know, said the wrong thing crossing and were banned for years. And you have to go through all sorts of embassy shit to try to get that undone. It's nuts.
That'd be an American guard blocking Canadian.
Yeah, I mean, most of my experiences are with the American guards hassling. And usually the hassle that we get going over is that they're very particular about, are you coming here to steal a job? And that's what it seems like it's all about. And, you know,
But to be fair, Adam, people get hassled trying to get into Canada too, especially artists get really hassled getting into Canada.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and the opposite happens coming in here. For me, coming into Canada, it really depends who has the passport, right? So me coming into Canada is a breeze because I pull up and I show my Canadian passport and, you know, and
just steal some American jobs. Right? Good work, Adam.
Yeah, exactly. High five and we come back over. but you know, you go the other way and you get all kinds of grief and scrutiny. And really, like, the words that you use in particular matter. Like, I had a 2-day conference in Buffalo that I was at, and I got over the border, or sorry, I'm pulling up to the border. It's like the conference started super early and I didn't know what kind of shit I was gonna run into, you know, at the border, because sometimes they get really backed up for all sorts of reasons. So I drive up there, it's way earlier than I need to be, and the guard's like, oh, where are you going? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going over to a conference. And what he zoned in on was that he's like, well, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a web developer. I make websites and stuff like that. And he's like, are you going to speak at the conference? And like, I think I was, but I had to catch myself there. And I was like, no, I'm going to attend this conference. And it's like, are you getting paid to go to this conference? And like, he kept needling around the question where he's like, is this work? Like, are you going to do work? And I'm like, no, like, it's of professional interest to me to attend this conference, but it's not like what a weird, like, and so then the next day as I'm getting to the border, the guy let me over. The next day I'm pulling up to the border. I'm thinking, okay, conference was bad choice of word last time. I'm going to say I'm going to a convention this time, because maybe convention seems less like it's a thing that I am potentially working at. So I'm like, convention, that's what I'm gonna do. I get up to the thing, I roll down my window, it's the same border guard. I'm like, bah, shit, okay, I'm not gonna change my story because this guy knows me from the last time. Like, conference, hi, remember I was here yesterday? He's like, yeah, go over, right? But that type of thing happens, and it really just depends on the mood of the person you get and what kind of questions they're going to ask you and how you're going to choose to answer them. And if you're going to be like a salty old British punk guy, you may say something that causes them to look into you more than you want them to, and then you're fucked. Really, like, the biggest part of it that is a problem for me, it is not so much the discretion of the guard to turn you away, is that if the guard does turn you away, then you have this nebulous, incredibly hard to get rid of record. Like, it's not so much that you got turned away, because you can't just come back. If you try to come back, they're like, no, you're in the list. Like, we turned you away. Like you are out. So, you know, it's not mainly like they were like, nope, back up, go down that exit. It's more like, you know, you all of a sudden have a record, you know, and you haven't really been charged with a crime, but you have a record and it's going to fuck you for a long time. So yeah, the borders are scary.
I'm here to sell heroin off. I mean, I'm here to convince go to a conference. Yeah. Let's play a jam and then we'll be back. Okay. We talked about this earlier. Let's play Ari Up and Vic Regario. That sounds pretty cool, huh? This is Ari Up and Vic Regario off a Japanese only 7-inch/CD compilation. This is called Man That I Love.
Love is a splendid thing. Future.
And we are back, and that was Ari up on Vic Ruggiero. How do you say Adam? Ruggiero?
I've been reading his name for 15 years, and I can't pronounce it still. So I think Ruggiero.
We're Paisans. We should know it, but we totally don't. Anyway, listen, this is not that fun of a story, this one coming up right here. The guitarist from Beach Slang has been asked to leave the band, and he seemingly agreed to leave the band. The guitarist is Ruben Gallego, and what happened was, I'm not going to read the whole statement here, but basically the Beach Slang, the band, alluded to some sort of sexual assault allegations against Ruben. And basically he said, his response was vague as well, but basically he said something that's very – basically he said, I'm not guilty, but mainly here's how he responded. It's difficult for me to defend myself because any defense I make is only going to serve to discredit this person that is the alleged victim, and I don't want to cause them any harm. To me, it seems that for her to make this call out means that she is clearly working through some of her own issues, and I hope that whatever they may be, she may find peace, clarity, and resolve. I've made myself available to her if she decides she wants to reach out to me directly or through an intermediary, and we can try to find some kind of resolution. And I did see a lot of people that I would say are proponents of, I guess, modern social justice said that all parties involved handled this well. That's what I saw. That's right. This is not scientific analysis. It's just what I tended to see on Twitter from people that I know that talk about sexual assault and the gender gap and that kind of thing online a lot. It's not how I would have handled it if I was the guitarist. But Adam White, I'll talk about that in a minute. Adam White, what do you think of being in a band when it turns out that someone's accusing you of guitarist of being doing some bad stuff? Or what if you're accused of doing some bad stuff?
This is an interesting way that they've played this because they're clearly aware of the reaction that, you know, every other musician in the internet age that has been accused rightly or wrongly with some sort of sexual impropriety has had to handle the reaction online. It is almost astonishing in how studied both the statement and the response are.
Yeah.
Like how There's nothing emotional here. It's not like, you know, they didn't kick him out, but at the same, they didn't kick him out with, you know, with malice. And at the same point, they didn't dismiss him after making a mess by trying to ignore it. There was no, like, no one stuck their foot in their mouth on either side of this, at least by my read. I'm sure it wrangles someone, because there's always someone that's going to be offended by something. But it really, it's amazing how measured they're purposefully being here. It's like they've seen the backlash that everyone gets by not handling this sort of thing well, and they are really, really trying to not get hit with that backlash, both the band and Gallego. And I don't mean that necessarily as like a character endorsement or anything, or it's just that it's kind of incredible that I guess that a band is conscious enough of what kind of reactions have been going around to do that. I'm hesitant to say if that's a good thing. Are we getting less honesty from this kind of story because everyone is so worried about being labeled whatever that they're almost saying nothing? I don't know.
Yeah, you know what, Adam? I'm glad you pointed out. I didn't think of it this way, but Adam, you are excited. This almost reads like the way a company would issue a statement of when they're in crisis and being accused of something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would not. I mean, I have no doubt that this is not a band of smart people, but it totally reads. Really, the response too. Like, it reads like there's been someone that has like come in to help write this, or at least to help vet it. Like they're. Regardless of, you know, we don't know the details of the allegation that Gallego is faced with, so, you know, we can't speak at all to what the truth is there or what the situation is there in any which way, shape, or form. But just knowing that he had to leave the band for this reason and that he acknowledged that, like, yeah, it reads like it was. You know, it was corporately put together to try to minimize, like, not to say to try to minimize guilt per se, or like admission of guilt, but like to the flip side of it, like it's written to try to say minimize accusations of, you know, victim shaming, to minimize accusations of you know, that either the band or Gallego, you know, is not a, you know, forward thinking progressive person. It's really interesting to me from that end. I mean, I can't speak at all to the allegation because, you know, who knows, but the band is really clearly looking at this and thinking about the band's career before they're thinking about, you know, necessarily say sticking up for their bud. And, you know, that I can't necessarily argue with that, because like Beach Slang seems like a band with enough buzz about them that it's, you know, it's potentially these guys' jobs. So, you know, maybe it may not be super, super punk rock to, you know, lance off the problem person at first sign of trouble. But on the other hand, they're not acting emotionally. They're thinking about their long term.
See, I have a theory here. I think these were written together.
Oh, yeah, I would agree.
Like definitely written together. Like, okay, we're going to say this, and then you're going to say this. I found his response really interesting, because he doesn't, like you said, Adam, there's almost no emotion here. They're very vague. And yet, he's not saying he's straight up guilty, but he's open to talking to this, I guess the victim, we'll call it, and then at the same time, you know, he talks about he ends it with, I'm starting therapy today, and hopefully this will help me to work off my to work on myself as a person and trying to move forward in a positive way. So it's not like, so they're not really, they're not really trying to keep it There's no really admission of anything. They're kind of it's just like stating what's going on, and there's nothing wrong with therapy at all. But I'm just saying, like, the fact that he ended it with that.
Well, see,
I don't know.
What I read out of that is, again, maybe there's a legal matter that's attached to this, but
oh yeah, sure.
But let's say there isn't, and mm-hmm. this isn't something necessarily that's going to show up in the court, but it's something that, like a lot of stuff these days, is going to be tried on the internet by
right.
a bunch of these people's peers and friends of friends and everything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this stuff is true, then, you know, everything that Beach Slang did to kind of detach themselves from him, you know, makes total sense. And they're almost like they're pre-covering their ass. They're making donations yeah. to, right? Like they're coming out right at the start being like, we don't know anything, but not only is this guy not in the band anymore, but we're donating money to the cause. Like we're really, uh-huh. really, really trying to show that we're supportive of, you know, of victims and everything else. But then when you look at his statement there, it's.
There's no admission of guilt, yet he's not denying anything.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Listen, I mean, I God forbid this happens to anybody, but if you yeah. ever get accused of something that you didn't do, something serious, you got to deny. I mean, you have to say, you know, I mean, you don't have to attack the other person. You can say, you know, the other person has problems or whatever. But if you get accused of something you didn't do that's serious, you have to deny. You can't say, oh, I respect the other person. Say it's not true. I understand that person's got issues. You got to say, I did not do it. I mean, and honestly,
he's not doing that here.
And it makes me a little curious. You know what I'm saying?
Like the thing is curious, really.
If someone accused me, I'm saying deny, because it's not true. I mean, this stuff spreads like wildfire. I mean, even poor Conor Oberst, where it was clearly fake, he still has that tinge on him a little bit, you know?
Right. Yeah, so like I'm wondering if he didn't deny because, you know, whatever's behind this, he knows it's not going to go – it's never going to end up in court. But he knows, like, for him, court is going to be like – Facebook and Tumblr and message right. boards and things like that. And if you think about, like, if you take all the actual legal advice out of it and just say, like, what's the best advice that you don't get raked over the coals on, say, Tumblr forever? Right. Maybe this is more written with mind.
I disagree, Adam, because he's not denying. So people are going to say, oh, well, he didn't deny. You know, he must have done it, you know?
Well, I figure that if he did deny, that's when everyone would attack him for, you know, doubting the victim or whatever. Like, it's so fucked up. Like, you can't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I feel that, like, from a legal standpoint, he's opening himself up to all sorts of stuff.
I think he could have maintained respect for the alleged victim here, but still strictly said, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not guilty of anything. And then say the rest of it. You know, I think he should have – I mean, and listen, this is all – what's the phrase? Sunday morning quarterback, Monday morning quarterbacking or whatever. You know, Tuesday morning soccer goaling. I think he should have denied. But and it makes me a little suspicious. But who knows? I mean, listen, everyone's innocent until proven guilty in America. I don't know about Canada. And so that's where we're at. You know, it's a difficult situation all around, and there are no golden answers. I'm saying if it was me, I would deny, you know. Listen, let's talk about a happy thing. I'm very excited about this. The Rolling Stones, they've announced their, I think, 28th or 27th studio album. I think it's 28th. It's a covers album. They're doing all blues covers from back in the day. It's called Blue and Lonesome. It's going to be out December 2nd. And I don't know why. I'm exceptionally excited to hear this album. And for some reason, I'm exceptionally, exceptionally excited to get it on vinyl. Maybe it's because I've never been collecting vinyl when the Rolling Stones have put out a new studio album on vinyl. I mean, their last studio album was 2005, The Bigger Bang. I did get that on vinyl, but I wasn't collecting vinyl until a few years later. So I'm super excited to get this. And even though the cover is pretty generic, I think the cover looks really, really cool. The question that I'm asking myself is, would I rather have a new studio album of new recordings or a studio album of them doing covers like they did on their very first album? In a way, there's a nice circularity to that, a nice completion of the circle. But on the other hand, it really is just a covers album that they banged out in a weekend, although it could be pretty cool. The fact is, I'll take what I can get. So I don't even know why, but I'm very, very, very excited for this. This is one of the most excited albums I've been for this year. I mean, I'm very excited for this.
I had a question when I saw this, and, yeah. and I guess you'll answer it, because I'm not a huge Stones fan. I don't mind them, but I don't seek them out. This won't sound like them. They won't sound tired in this
because they're old.
Oh no!
Well, because I mean, there's no doubt that the Rolling. Well, that yeah, and also I mean, they're hugely influenced by blues. This won't be something that fans will be kind of not surprised by. Or I mean, I really didn't know where to go with this one.
It's surprising that they're putting out anything at all, because everyone, including myself, pretty much assumed that the Rolling Stones album age is over. That they've been putting out tons of awesome archival material. It's almost like being a Grateful Dead or a Zappa or a Dylan or a Neil Young fan. They're putting out a lot of cool neat archival stuff. Fans will probably be excited by this, because the Rolling Stones began as a blues covers group. The first three Rolling Stones records are basically them just covering Chuck Berry, the blues, and some folk tunes. That's what the first three or four Rolling Stones records are. Will they sound tired? The answer is I don't think so. I saw them live 2 years ago, and what might be the best show I ever saw. They kicked ass. They've got a ton of energy, especially Mick Jagger. But I don't think they'll sound tired. And also, it's blues kinds of never – blues guys – like listen to guys like Buddy Guy or B.B. King. They're super old, but they still sound fantastic because there's so much technique involved in the art. It's not like punk rock, where a lot of the power comes from energy, if you will. In blues, it comes from technique and soul, and that only generally gets better as you age. I mean, even Chuck Berry, he can't sing anymore because he's 92, but Chuck Berry can still play the guitar like Chuck Berry, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I saw B.B. King a few years ago before he died, and it was, you know, it was the kind of show that like should be totally both A, not up my racket, and B, not that good. I mean, it was in a casino, and it was really good. He sat in a chair the whole time because he didn't want to, you know, he was old. He didn't want to get up and, you know, run around. So, you know, old guy sitting in a chair playing songs, but it was phenomenal. And there is absolutely something to be said for like blues in particular being something that, you know, you can do quite well as an old guy. Hell, I think old guys can play rock and roll just fine myself. But
the Rolling Stones, for example.
I don't know if this interests me too much, just because the Stones are one of those bands with like such a depth of catalog that for anything that they release that's new, I feel that like, well, I haven't heard the last 19 albums, so I'm probably not going to hear this one, because inertia is a hard thing to get out of. But John, I am excited that you're excited.
I'm very excited, and I don't even know. Like, I'm really, really excited to get the vinyl record. I'm probably going to play. I don't even know why. I mean, I've got lots of Rolling Stones records. But I'm super excited to get this Rolling Stones record. I'm very excited. Very excited.
That's cool. It'll probably be very well done. So you should go like sit outside the store in a little tent, like people waiting for iPhones.
I'll have to wait. Like off, like Borders for some reason will do like a exclusive vinyl pressings for these kinds of records. So maybe I'll go wait at Borders. anyway, let's do our last news story of the day. I think Adam White had something to talk about this. Against Me, I mean, I'm sorry, Green Day, who are still on or just wrapping up a theater tour, have now announced a mega tour. And honestly, I'm kind of mad that I didn't go to the theater tour, not because I really wanted to see Green Day, but I would have liked to have seen Dog Party in like this huge venue for them. It would have been cool, but I didn't go. Anyways, Green Day, now they've announced the mega tour following the small theater tour, and who's opening for them but none other than Against Me. So Dog Party just opened for them, and Against Me is opening for them now. Of course, Against Me is, I think you could call them, an LGBTA band, and Green Day has a long history of having LGBTA bands open for them, quite namely when they had Pansy Division open for them on the Dookie tour, which was met with a lot of conflict from the audience. I don't think Against Me will have that problem. Adam White, what are your thoughts on this tour?
I think it's really cool for Against Me. It should definitely expose them to a ton of people that may.
You think is it Against Me pretty big by now?
They are, but we're too much in the bubble, and you know, and my mom probably knows who Green Day is, but she probably doesn't know who Against Me is. So it's one of those one of those types of things. Like there's big and then there's big. I have no interest in attending this particular soiree. If for no other reason than like looking at the kind of venues that they are playing, they're playing a lot of arenas and things like that. That's just not where I want to. That's not the venue. That's not the type of setting that I want to listen to this kind of music. Like, I don't want to have to go buy a seat in a row to go watch, like a three chord punk band. That just doesn't work for me. I mean, if you want to go, by all means, go. But you know, it's a thing. People seem really excited. I am shocked how excited people are. People from our punk rock world, from the punk news world, that I figure would be far more jaded on this thing, are just throwing up their joy on the various social networks that they're on in ways that I am having a hard time comprehending. So this is apparently a really huge deal for a lot of people. So, you know,
like, Ricky, you know,
does this tick your box?
Well, first of all, I don't mean to spoil everyone's fun, but Against Me toured with Green Day in 2005. I'm looking at Brian Schultz's review of it from September 6, 2005, where it was Against Me, Jimmy Eat World, and Green Day headlining. So this isn't anything new, not like super new, but, you know, Adam, you bring up a good point. I don't want to see either of these bands in a huge arena. I don't really like arena shows. I've been to a few, and
I thought you were like the Against Me guy, man.
No. Whoa. I'm seeing them with Bad Religion in next month, and I think I'm seeing them at some San Diego festival also. So I'm seeing them at least twice this year. I think it's only twice this year. Also, they're not, this tour actually ends in San Diego, so and maybe there'll be an LA show. That'd be cool. But I don't know. Some people brought up the point, like, I don't know that they don't know how well Against Me's music will do in an arena, which I think is a good question. I don't know if it's necessarily true. But yeah, here's the thing. If I was going to see Green Day, I probably should have bought a ticket for that theater tour. It was a pretty expensive ticket, and I think I'm seeing some other band that night anyway. I didn't need the Ticketmaster fees this time around, and I've seen Dog Party before. I mean, Green Day I have not seen yet, but I don't feel like I'm missing anything, especially with this new album. If they announce an LA tour, I'll definitely consider it and see what the deal is. I'm not shit canning this completely. Actually, not at all. I think this is if I'm going to see Green Day, I would at least like to see a band that I love, like Against Me, open for them. So it's not, you know, not like me, you know, a little bit over mediocre or whatever. So I'm cool with this. I would actually like to see reviews. I'd be very interested to see how that goes.
Really, more interesting than the fact that this tour is happening to me is the fact that, like, the routing, at least in the Canadian dates that I can speak to, is pretty interesting, because they're playing a few kind of like they're playing a handful of shows around Toronto, but not in Toronto, and that actually is a big deal. Where they're playing. They're playing a show in Hamilton, Ontario. They're playing a show in London, Ontario. Usually, if there's a tour of this size that's going to come through, they're going to play a big thing in Toronto, and then those other like smaller markets that are still within like a couple hours drive are probably going to be, like, you know, forbidden from having the show for whatever territorial reasons bookers use when they book things like that. So I look at this going like, hey, good for Hamilton getting a Green Day show. That's cool, I guess. But yeah, so let's speak. We're super long in this episode, but let's speak really briefly about this record, because I think we need to put all this in context. I today listened to half of Revolution Radio.
Okay.
and then I turned it off because it was boring and sad for me to listen to it because it was boring me. I can't do it. I feel that everyone's gotten over their Green Day jadedness and is ready to be excited about this band again, and I can't do it. It seems so boring and overwrought, and
it's an aimless record is what it is.
It was one of these things where, like, I pulled it up on Apple Music while I was at work today, and I started playing it, and it was like, it was, let's say, halfway into the first song, and then I accidentally, like, hit a key on my keyboard and it jumped back to the beginning of the song, and then I went, oh, and then I just kind of grabbed the cursor and plunked it right in the middle of the track, where, like, I was probably over here and it'll keep going from there, where, like, I felt no need to, like, orient myself properly to the moment in the song when I left. It was like, I was near the end, let's just get to the end of this. And yeah, like, oh, like four or five, like, songs into it, and I'm just like, this feels like it's taking forever, and it is not doing for me what a band that plays like pop punk music should do for me. Like, it seems tired, and it's produced in a way that I don't want. And like if I want pop punk music, I want it to sound like shit. And this is what I've realized. I don't want it to sound good. I want it to sound like it's on a fucking cassette. So that said, I want to close this out by playing a song that is a pop punk song that was from a fucking cassette and sounds like it was totally recorded in a tin can. And in my mind is really the ideal form that this music comes in. This is a song by a band from Ottawa, Ontario called BB Cream. It is from a self-titled record that they released in April of this year. Apparently, me having just learned that this band existed, of course, they are going to break up at the end of November and are playing one final show. but they are apparently also releasing another new record at that final show, so I guess that's good. So anyways, there's more from this band to come, but they'll be broken up by December. So here you go. This is BB Cream out of Ottawa, Ontario. The song is called Mother Nature, and it makes me happy in a way that the Green Day stuff did not.
And that was Adam White bringing us BB Cream out of Ottawa, Ontario. Ricky Frankel, any cool shows coming up? Any closing last words?
Cool shows coming up. Let's see. I think I have. November. Oh, actually, I'm seeing the Suicide Machines this month in Santa Ana. And then November, I got Bad Religion and Against Me. I got Off in like a really small venue, which I'm excited about. Murderland, maybe Svetlana's are coming here too in November. And then I think that's it for now.
Well, sounds exciting. Ricky, thanks for being on. Adam, why any cool shows coming up?
Oh, my God. I don't even know. Early November, John K. Sampson in Toronto. That's the only one that I know that is coming up. They actually have a ticket to. Actually, the 3rd of November, New Swears. Huge band for me recently. They signed up with Dynalone, so they're playing a show in Hamilton, and that's going to be cool. So there you go, Hamilton. That's more exciting than Green Day coming. New Swears.
All right. Well, Adam, thanks for being on. It was kind of a slow couple of months for me, but man, I got Descendants effed up in Nightbirds tomorrow night. I'm
nice.
Excited. I got nice. Crazy in the Brains and Posers on Saturday. I've got Katie Goodman and Lacera next Saturday. I've got next Friday, I think. I've got The Garden next Saturday, and I think Screaming Females week after that. So it's going to be a good fall in Philadelphia. Thanks for listening. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. I'd like to thank featured editor John Gentile for editing this episode, and we will see you next week.